You're listening to the Baha'i World News Service.
Now live at local house of worship.
In this episode, we are joined by participants in a recent series of consultations held at the Baha'i World Centre on the topic of how Baha'i houses of worship are becoming the spiritual centres of communities around the world. They discuss the dynamic interplay between service and worship and how these two inseparable aspects of our lives reinforce one another. We hear from Sarah Creedy from Australia.
What I've come to appreciate is that really every person has an innate desire to serve.
George Davis from the United States.
When we serve others in this true spirit of worship, that is the same as prayer.
Jaydeep Mahalati from India.
As the devotional character of the community is taking shape, families are coming together to consult.
Natalie Ngonyem from Cameroon.
So you can imagine that in such a community, when there is like these challenges that we can have, it's no longer like you are alone to do it.
Nadim Uladi from Bolivia.
In a way, prayer keeps you anchored to the right things.
And Singyi Lau from Malaysia.
They stay together, they study together, they learn different insights and skills about how to help the community that they are in.
From the Baha'i World News Service, this is In Conversation, a podcast series that explores experiences from Baha'i efforts to contribute to social progress, from the grassroots to the international level.
Hey, good evening, friends. It's so wonderful to be with you all and, to have this conversation about some of the really exciting developments going on around the world among Baha'i communities, and really to have a chance to share some of our experience with how Baha'is are trying to contribute to the betterment of the world through exploring the relationship between worship and service to humanity, and how that takes place in different ways in different communities according to culture and experience, but how it's really all part of one process of learning. So just looking forward to any thoughts or especially experiences or stories you may want to share about that.
Mm-hmm. I was reflecting on this relationship between service and worship and how both in a way are like emanations of the soul, that we are inherently spiritual beings and that it is the longing of our hearts to help others. Mm. And to reflect the qualities of our Creator, generosity, love, that both of these things require purity of heart. Mm. And that as we actually engage in both prayer and service, it's also a means of purifying our lives and our hearts and our motives. Mm. What is the motivation behind helping people, really? Mm. And like, if those motivations aren't pure, how far will they go in actually serving humanity? Mm. And I think what we see in places where a local house of worship or a national house of worship have emerged, the consciousness of a community around these themes, the pattern of life that emerges as more and more people striving to live a life shaped by this principle of worship and service, it naturally gives rise to a spirit, this devotional spirit. And then the house of worship is a physical representation of that. Mm-hmm. It's that spirit really is what brings about this temple, this edifice.
Yeah, it reminds me of a quote from the Baha'i writings, which says that work when done in a spirit of service is worship. Yeah. So the idea that when we serve others in this true spirit of worship, that is the same as prayer, Mm-hmm. It's not that we don't benefit from prayer alone, but prayer has to be expressed in deeds and action, right?
I think this is why worship and service is inseparable. Mm-hmm. So because if you are only praying, but your prayer does not lead to service to others, then eventually you are only praying for your own benefit and your own self, right? Mm. But if you are only trying to serve others, yes, it's good. But along the way, you may lose your way because you do not know, you forget the higher purpose of your service. Mm. So it has to come together and each will reinforce each other. Mm. So when you pray, you'll gain strength or you'll be inspired to serve. And when you serve, you'll find more reasons to pray. Mm. So it's, yeah.
And I think what you mentioned, saying in a way, prayer keeps you anchored to the right things. Mm-hmm. And those right things, each one believes in differently, but it's that being able to look up and look over all these challenges that the world presents. Mm. And prayer keeps you anchored in those, let's say, correct tenets or right tenets that have to do with justice, unity. And this is what inspires everything you do, you know. And of course, what you do also feeds off of prayer. But this pattern of community life is definitely the one thing that will keep whatever community anchored, you know. And as Sarah was saying, it will feed your soul. And feeding your soul is basically what will keep your heart pumping.
The things that we're talking about around this prompting of the heart of the individual to really aspire to higher motives and higher goals, it comes from within, but it seems to be innate or built into who we are. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not something that someone gives us or someone teaches us that, you know, but really something that is really a birthright in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think what's interesting is that it can also start to get clouded by a lot of the forces that are impacting people in our society as well. Like, I don't think we can deny that there are very strong forces of materialism, individualism. You know, like, there are a lot of things that prompt us to make decisions that are not aligned with this higher nature and that also feel very natural. We also have a lower nature, you know, that it can be very tempting to live a life that is centered on ourselves, to you know, relax when we have some spare time rather than go and help someone else. You know, like, what is it that keeps us motivated, keeps us going? I think what I've come to appreciate is that really every person has an innate desire to serve, and sometimes the struggle is you know, not having the space, not having an understanding of how they can, you know, channel that. We're actually like, what is the purpose of our study? What is the purpose of our work? What is the purpose of, like, being a member of our family, you know, a contributing member of our family? All of it is in the spirit of service. Really, that we don't see service as this, like, separate thing that we do. Service defines everything that we do. It gives shape and purpose to all of the things that we engage in our lives. And I think as young people begin to appreciate this, like, this concept of living a coherent life where service is at the center and everything that we do emanates from that, then the motivation comes quite naturally, really. Yeah.
Okay, that just reminds me about this collective transformation. So I have this story from one village in the East Cameroon. So there, you have a devotional gathering all over the different houses. So today is a devotional gathering. I come with the whole of family. So we go together to the neighbor. We pick the neighbor. We go to the next neighbor around the village to call the other one to go for prayers. The final place where there is a devotional garden, you may have that more than 600 people attending, and it is the whole village that are coming together. So there you see this collective transformation. So you can imagine that in such a community, when there is like these challenges that we can have, it's no longer like you are alone to do it. So you have the community with you, and together now we consult and we move forward. So we see this really collective transformation. Why are we like encouraged to say down prayers?
Down prayers.
We have done prayers, and we have also evening prayers. Why this particular time doing prayers at dawn?
I think this idea of praying in the morning, be it dawn or be it any time of the morning, it really sets the whole tone for your whole day. I mean, the spirit in which you will be in the day. And then we see it very often, not just in the neighborhoods, definitely in the families. Now it's becoming a culture that the children, along with their parents, when they want to begin their day, they sit together and then they pray and then they go about their work. In the evenings, they sit together, they pray and then they go to bed. There have been instances where parents have come and told us, they don't let us sleep without saying prayers. So, you know, this has become such a culture, such a habit, that the family coming together, the children wanting to pray morning and evening, and, you know, it gives you that spiritual energy for the rest of the day. Even at the house of worship, we see, no matter how early you open, there will be a lot of people wanting to come in. And many people who really want to meditate and pray, they like those early hours because that's where their mind is at peace. And then they really want to come and spend the time in prayer and meditation so that the rest of their day is spent in that spirit.
So also even in Kinshasa, where we have the temple now, National Temple, it is so regular. No, most of the time in a capital city, you may say, okay, we are busy. We have a city life. I have to go to school, I have to go to work. But how to build like this devotional character in a city? So you have families like every morning, we have already our devotional gathering at home. And we know that each house that is having devotional gathering is no longer a simple house, it's become a heavenly house. So even this, we already have temples in our houses, in our community. So in Kinshasa, early in the morning, you have devotional gathering at home, and the whole family now go together to the temple for prayers. So you have like sometimes the sun rises around 5:30. So by 5:30, you have people coming to the center, to the house of worship for prayers. And you have, like school has to start at 8. So before going to school, like it becomes natural that, yes, I've done the prayers at home with the whole family, but I should go to the temple to pray also to the temple before now going to school. And I have to go to the temple to serve. So you see how all this starts with family. You are the family already discussing with the family members about what I can do to serve mankind, to serve humanity. You do it at home, but also you do it on the temple grounds, and you do it also wherever you are. So it is really, we see this collective transformation. Formerly, we were worshiping, but we worship and then we pray, but we sit. But now we worship and we serve. And there are different types of services in all ways of life. So, and we cannot transform the world alone. It is always with other people. So we go together and then we have this collective transformation.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful description of, I think, the pattern of how this process is affecting families and communities and how it spreads and becomes really a part of the fabric of the community itself. And so I wonder if we could talk also about some examples based on how these transform into or become even steps to improve the material conditions, or you mentioned education, like youth inspired to go on to school and this kind of thing. Are there other examples or specific stories that maybe you would want to share about how the effect of this is really actually leading to the actual betterment in even material terms, as well as within the culture of and well-being of the family itself.
Actually, I was thinking about this idea that Sarah was sharing about this impact of the negative forces that is having on the population, especially on the youth. Mm. And India is also affected by all these forces, it be rural or urban setting, it's very much there. But the fact that we are seeing right now is the effect of these educational activities, the moral educational activities that run through the Baha'i friends and their people who think alike, is basically these friends are now trying to think how they can become positive contributors to the community. At the same time, they are also inspiring others to join forces with them. Like how she was describing this idea of one family taking the other and coming together. I was just thinking of these youth who are basically in their own circle of youth. They are trying to then inspire other youth to basically now come forward and think positively towards their community and how to shield themselves against these negative forces. And actually recently I was talking to one of the youth who had come to serve at the House of Worship in India. And he was describing the situation back home in his village. And he was saying that most of the youth at his age are now into bad activities, like they have stopped education. But this particular individual, he said, my coming to this area for service has actually saved me from that kind of life. And he's actually pursuing his higher education at the same time as he's serving. And there are many such instances. It's not just at the House of Worship. Also, a lot of youth in the community, as you mentioned, they are serving at the same time. They're trying to do something better for their own community, maybe their peers or maybe younger generation than them, and helping them to become better human beings. At the same time, they're pursuing their higher education, they're pursuing a certain profession. So these are certain visible changes, transformations we can see. Another major change that we see is basically when we have these settings in the families, when families come together, there are certain settings when families, one neighbor did not talk to other, you know, for various reasons. Maybe it's a difference in opinion, maybe it's a difference in religious background. But because over a period of time, this devotional character has developed in that community and these families have learned to come together, the bonds we can see has really strengthened between those families. There is a nice friendly, like, you know, extended family kind of setup now. Mm. So these are some of the transformative changes we see. The kids play together, the kids come together for different kind of activities, they're going to school together. So these are some positive forces that we see that are trying to protect these younger generation from these negative forces.
Mm-hmm. I think that is why it's so important to have collective action. Mm. Because when we have collective action, not only we are able to, you know, reinforce each other's action by the different talents and capacities that we each have, but there's this sense of mutual support that we have. If someone falls down, another person is there to support him. If someone feels sad or is encountered with a challenge, another person is there to behind him. It's like for example, like now we are seeing like groups of youth going to study, to learn how to serve their community better. And we have seen that when the youths come from the same neighborhood, for example, and study, go through the process together, they are able to serve better because they are able to support each other through the years and navigate through their different periods of life.
You know, as we spent time together in conversations over the past few days, and especially thinking about the role and influence that Baha'i houses of worship or Baha'i temples play in this process, even though we acknowledge that these activities, as has been described, don't occur only at temples or houses of worship. They occur in communities in many, many more instances, even if people don't have access to a house of worship. Yet at the same time, once a house of worship, you know, arises in a community, it seems to have this ability to magnify all the things that are really actually are started in a community. So it's not that one is required to go to these places to pray or to serve or to, you know, be a part of collective life. But once a house of worship comes into existence, now it becomes like a beacon that just kind of just intensifies these influences.
You know, just as you're saying, it intensifies and it amplifies and it magnifies, I think it also calls on its population to come to it. I don't know if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But we've had this very interesting experience in the temple, the House of Worship of Chile, where four different choirs came together in this one place, in this one beacon, and it was just mesmerizing, you know, like the whole experience of different choirs, different denominations, different peoples, different strata of society coming together to pray at a certain point and a certain time of the day. It was just out of this world, you know, it was just something else. And I can just try to think of what will come of this, you know? I can't even dare imagine, but the bonds of friendship that were established, the air that was, I don't know how to even explain it, you know? Again, it's this whole houses of worship attracting, you know, these souls to commune with God, to talk to God, to worship God in whatever language, in whatever belief they have, is just something very special.
Conversation, a podcast series from the Baha'i World News Service. For more podcasts and stories, visit news.baha'i.org.